Welcome to God and Country Biblical Exposition. Before we get into this week's program, I'd like to share some general thoughts about politics and the Christian life. I'm glad I didn't start my Christian walk out immersed in the political culture war. For the first 30 years of my Christian life, I didn't engage much in politics or political research or political talk, political activism. I was solely focused on Christian doctrine and the issues of Christian living, personal holiness. Back in the 1980s, I would vote. I would read, the Wall Street Journal and U.S. News and World Report. I would occasionally write a legislator. But politics wasn't my focus. That was something God took care of. And that attitude was really a good thing because I needed to grow in my relationship with Christ and overcome my own selfish, sinful attitudes. I can't imagine how stunted I would have been if I started off my Christian life immersed in politics, trying to take the speck out of the eyes of the politicians rather than taking the beam out of my own eye. For a new Christian, he needs to first learn how to grow in love and holiness. Focusing on the errors of government could result in pride, in self-righteousness, in misplaced priorities. I mean, all the time we see political hotheads. They can tell us all about illegal immigration and deficit spending and COVID policy and critical race theory. But they don't know how to love. They don't know how to be good parents. They don't know how to love their spouse. They don't know the doctrines of God. They don't even know how to share the gospel. Because they're spending all of their time watching the media rather than studying the Word of God and working on areas of Christian character. John Calvin wrote the famous work, The Institutes of the Christian Religion. And he wrote this over his entire lifetime. And it's a massive work. But it wasn't until the final chapter, Book 4, Chapter 20, that he dealt with Christians and politics. Chapter 20, it's called The Doctrine or the Treatise on Civil Government. And I've always seen in this an example of Christian priorities. Now, I'm not saying that Christians, new Christians, shouldn't be politically aware or involved. Just be careful. There are many other subjects that need attention first. And also, don't disparage other Christians who may not be as politically engaged as you want them to be. If they're in the Word, if they're in a fellowship, if they're growing in the Lord, if they're serving Christ, they're fine. They're doing more to change the world for good than most politicians. They don't have to all be political wonks. Now, in my program this week, I want to again address government COVID policy to use this event to help God's people grow in discernment, discerning between truth and error. Philippians chapter 1, verse 9. And this I pray, that your love may abound still more and more in real knowledge and all discernment, so that you may approve the things that are excellent in order to be sincere and blameless until the day of Christ. So we need to discern. The Bible, the book of the Revelation, doesn't tell us anything about the COVID-19 virus coming along. We don't find instructions like, thou shalt take, the vaccine, but by the fourth booster, that's where you draw the line. But even though we don't have the specifics, in the Revelation, God's people are told to watch out for totalitarian economic systems where we can't buy or sell unless we give our allegiance to the Antichrist government. Revelation 13. We're told to beware of economic control. We're told to beware of the spirit of this age, the spirit of this world. 1 John 4. We're told that the nations will be drunk with the wine of Babylon's ideology or passion, and we're told that the nations will be deceived by the sorcerer of Babylon. And so we need to discern what that means in our current generation. We need to discern the errors and the delusions in our day. And in every century of church history, there have been errors and delusions in the culture. just like in Russia in 1917 and in Germany in the 1930s, the Bible said nothing about beware of the Bolsheviks or beware of the Nazis, but still the church, by the Spirit of God, had to figure out how the devil's old lie was being dressed up in new language. The church had to discern the general spirit of totalitarianism and discern when the culture is being drunk with the wine of government utopianism, that the state is God and the state is our savior. Now, in critiquing cultural and social errors, there are going to be some kooky conspiracy theorists who in their attempts to discern the situation go way too far. And you know what I'm talking about, such as those who say that the vaccines are a plot by the Illuminati to depopulate the earth, or that the vaccines contain nanobots that can communicate with the government. These wacky conspiracy theorists are onto something in that they don't trust government, but they fail in that they lack common sense and they lack hard evidence. Now I'm sure there are some people who want to depopulate the earth, and I'm sure there's such a thing as nanobots, but that's not likely the real evil that's going on here in this COVID policy. Actually, I wish it were, because then it would be an easier nut to crack. Unfortunately, the evil is way more subtle and sophisticated. Last month, I received a document that looked quite official. Global breaking news, January 15th, 2022. Big Pharma, China, Vatican, convicted of genocide and criminal conspiracy by international court. COVID vaccine prohibited as arrest of leaders and seizures of assets are ordered. Well, I received this hard copy, and I also saw it posted by conservatives on social media. It's quite sophisticated and detailed, but it's all fake. No international court has ruled against COVID policy. So who would put something like this out and circulate it among conservatives? Maybe someone who misread the story that a complaint was filed with the International Criminal Court? Or I wonder if there are some people out there on the left who circulate this stuff to make conservatives look foolish. Like QAnon promises that there's a secret plan by Trump to overthrow the deep state. So there are some things Christians need to discern regarding, you know, COVID policy, but we must be careful and very biblical in our assessment. I could even appreciate a Christian who says, COVID-19 is one big distraction from the real problem facing this world, the greater disease of sin, and the only vaccine that anyone should be concerned with is God's salvation plan through Christ. Amen. And I could appreciate a Christian who says, I refuse to even discuss vaccines and masks with anyone. The only thing I'm going to discuss is for people to have their sins washed away through the blood of Christ. I don't think that would be a bad approach to all of this COVID hysteria. But there are some other important spiritual lessons that we can learn from this whole COVID thing. I have here in front of me a whole list of interesting stories that really show how government COVID policy is misguided, ignorant, irrational, dangerous. And I'll share some of these stories in a moment. But let me just jump to my conclusion. All these stories, all that is going on, illustrate how our current generation puts too much trust in science and too much trust in government bureaucrats. And that's a dangerous thing. I just watched a clip of Justin Trudeau, the Prime Minister of Canada, and he must have said a dozen times in 5 minutes, trust the science, trust the science, trust the science. Who's the science? Nobody's going to be named because nobody wants to take that responsibility. The science is this ethereal spirit of the age that we need to trust. A consensus of the prevailing narrative created by Big Pharma, the World Health Organization, the NIH, Anthony Fauci, the Biden administration, the CDC. Yet in September of 2021, just last year, the International Alliance of Physicians and Medical Scientists met in Rome for a three-day summit, ending in a document critical of the popular COVID-19 science. 17,000 scientists signed a letter opposing current big pharma and government policy toward COVID-19. And there are many other medical groups and physicians who are opposed to the current policy. But we're being constantly told to trust the science. Well, it's the science that the government chooses to follow. My intuition, right from the beginning of this COVID-19 outbreak, was to be suspicious of the science. And that seems to be the divide between the masking vaccine crowd and the non-masking and the non-vaccine crowd. Whether you trust the science or whether you're a bit suspicious of the science. You know, these mask and vaccine diehards are really amazing. It's their moral crusade to trust the science, and they demand that you do the same. The Democrat strategist, James Carville, on his podcast last week, had a caller who wanted to ban all unvaccinated people from interstate travel. And Carville said anyone who hasn't taken the vaccine is a piece of shit, and he wanted to punch them in the face. Why such violence? Why such confidence in his rightness? Because he trusts the science. Trusting man and mankind's achievement is his faith. It's what he builds his life upon. And to doubt the current narrative of science and government is to doubt his God, government and science. This is his religion. It's a religion of many people in this world. And it's a religion that will set them up for the Antichrist spirit. This last week, when the news came out that many blue states were going to be dropping their mask mandates, here's an article quoting all of the left-leaning commentators saying how terrible this is. Well, because for the last 2 years, they have been believing the science of the Biden administration and Anthony Fauci that everyone must wear a mask or otherwise more people will die. I love this piece from the satirical site Babylon Bee. CDC director now says to do whatever Texas did 12 months ago. Here's another example of diehard COVID policy believers. Last week, the city of New York fired 1,430 city workers because they weren't vaccinated. That's how dedicated these people are to their belief in the vaccine. They believe it's a moral necessity, and therefore they have a moral right to force others to be vaccinated, even if it means these people losing their livelihood. The Department of Homeland Security recently said COVID-19 misinformation is a terror threat to the United States. Quote, the DHS sent out a terrorism advisory bulletin on Monday warning of a heightened threat environment fueled in part by false or misleading narratives and conspiracy theories spreading online and undermining public trust in government institutions. So some leading bureaucrats at the DHS consider trusting the government's science narrative as an essential religious dogma. As is often said, the problem is not that atheists believe in nothing. The problem is that they believe in anything. Here's a clip from Rachel Maddow. When the vaccines first came out, notice her confidence in the vaccines without her having any evidence.
It means that instead of the vaccine being able, instead of the virus being able to hop from person to person to person to person, spreading and spreading, sickening some of them, but not all of them. And the ones that it doesn't sicken don't know they have it. And then they give it to even more people because they didn't recognize they were, right? Instead of the virus being able to hop from person to person to person, potentially mutating and becoming more virulent and drug resistant along the way, now we know that the vaccines work well enough that the virus stops with every vaccinated person. A vaccinated person gets exposed to the virus does not infect them, the virus cannot then use that person to go anywhere else. It cannot use a vaccinated person as a host to go get more people. That means the vaccines will get us to the end of this if we just go fast enough to get the whole population.
So why was Rachel Maddow so sure? Is she a scientist? Did she know something about these new vaccines that we didn't know? No, she was beginning with an a priori, trust in medical science, based on her own worldview. What I would even call wishful thinking. So one of the key spiritual lessons in this COVID crisis is this unquestioning trust in government and in science. Jeremiah 17:5, thus saith the Lord, cursed is the man who trusts in mankind and makes flesh his strength and whose heart turns away from the Lord. Psalm 118:8, it's better to take refuge in the Lord than to trust in man. It's better to take refuge in the Lord than to trust in princes. Psalm 146:3, do not trust in princes, in mortal man in whom there is no salvation. And Isaiah chapter 2, verse 22. Stop regarding man whose breath of life is in his nostrils, for why should he be esteemed? And so, it is really a theological perspective that causes those with a biblical Christian worldview to question the science. They have an a priori belief in man's corrupt nature, in man's fallible intellect. Remember, these great social leaders and these medical scientists are the same people that believe evolution and random chance created mankind. These are the same people who believe in abortion and transgenderism and same-sex marriage. Now, sure, they can get some science right, but at least be a little bit suspicious, especially when money, ego, and a savior complex are involved. Once again, in the Revelation, we read that the people of the world become drunk with the ideological wine of Babylon and are deceived by the sorcery of Babylon. COVID policy may be a foreshadowing of how people, the people of this world, will go along with a totalitarian government, how they will trust the social scientists without question, so that they can have peace and safety promised by the government of the Antichrist. People are primed to be duped by Babylon the Great. Need an example? Back in 1979, there was a 60-minute program with Wally Schaefer. Remember him? He did a piece on the swine flu vaccine. Listen to this.
What will we worry about this year? And what kind of shots will we be told to take? Remember the swine flu scare of 1976? That was the year the U.S. government told us all that swine flu could turn out to be a killer that could spread across the nation. And Washington decided that every man, woman, and child in the nation should get a shot to prevent a nationwide outbreak, a pandemic. Well, 46 million of us obediently took the shot. And now 4,000 Americans are claiming damages from Uncle Sam amounting to $3.5 billion. Because of what happened when they took that shot. By far the greatest number of the claims, two-thirds of them, are for neurological damage or even death, allegedly triggered by the flu shot. We pick up the story back in 1976 when the threat posed by the swine flu virus seemed very real indeed.
This virus was the cause of a pandemic in 1918 and 1919 that resulted in over 500,000 deaths in the United States, as well as 20 million deaths around the world.
See how easy it is to...
Thus, the U.S. government's publicity machine was cranked into action to urge all America to protect itself against the swine flu menace.
Influenza is serious business. During major flu epidemics, millions of people are sick and thousands die. Well, this year you can get protection. The vaccines are safe, easy to take, and they can protect you against flu. So roll up your sleeve. Protect yourself.
One of those who did roll up her sleeve was Judy Roberts. She was perfectly healthy, an active woman, when in November of 1976, she took her shot. 2 weeks later, she says, she began to feel a numbness starting up her legs.
I joked about it at that time. I said, I'll be numb to the knees by Friday if this keeps up. By the following week, I was totally paralyzed.
It may be a little difficult for you to answer this question, but have you recovered as much as you are going to recover?
Yes, this is it.
So you will now have a legacy of braces on your legs for the rest of your life?
Yes, the weakness in my hands will stay and the leg braces will stay.
So Judy Roberts and her husband have filed a claim against the U.S. government. They're asking $12 million, though they don't expect to get nearly that much.
Judy, why did you take the flu shot?
I'd never taken any other flu shots, but I felt like this was going to be a major epidemic. And the only way to prevent a major epidemic of a really deadly variety of flu was for everybody to be immunized.
Where did this so-called deadly variety of flu, where did it first hit back in 1976? It began right here at Fort Dix in New Jersey in January of that year when a number of recruits began to complain of respiratory ailments, something like the common cold. An Army doctor here sent samples of their throat cultures to the New Jersey Public Health Lab to find out just what kind of bug was going around here. One of those samples was from a Private David Lewis who had left his sickbed to go on a forced march. Private Lewis had collapsed on that march, and his sergeant had revived him by mouth-to-mouth resuscitation. But the sergeant showed no signs of illness. A few days later, Private Lewis died.
If this disease is so potentially fatal that it's going to kill a young, healthy man, a middle-aged school teacher doesn't have a prayer.
The New Jersey lab identified most of those soldiers' throat cultures as the normal kind of flu virus going around that year, but they could not make out what kind of virus was in the culture from the dead soldier and from four others who were sick. So they sent those cultures to the Federal Center for Disease Control in Atlanta, Georgia, for further study. A few days later, they got the verdict, swine flu.
But that much publicized outbreak of swine flu at Fort Dix involved only Private Lewis, who died, and those four other soldiers who recovered completely without the swine flu shot.
If I had known at that time that the boy had been in a sick bed, got up, went out on a forced march, and then collapsed and died, I would never have taken the shot.
The rationale for our recommendation was not on the basis of the death of a single individual, but it was on the basis that when we do see a change in the characteristics of the influenza virus, it is a massive public health problem in this country.
Dr. David Sensor, then head of the CDC, the Center for Disease Control in Atlanta, is now in private industry. He devised the swine flu program, and he pushed it.
You began to give flu shots to the American people in October of 76.
October 1st.
By that time, how many cases of swine flu around the world had been reported?
There had been several reported, but none confirmed.
Now, nearly everyone was to receive the shot in a public health facility where a doctor might not be present. Therefore, it was up to the CDC to come up with some kind of official consent form, giving the public all the information it needed about the swine flu shot. This form stated that the swine flu vaccine had been tested. What it didn't say was that after those tests were completed, the scientists developed another vaccine, and that was the one given to most of the 46 million who took the shot. That vaccine was called X-53A.
Was X-53A ever field tested?
I can't say. I would have to...
It wasn't.
I don't know.
The information form, the consent form, was also supposed to warn people about any risks of serious complications following the shot. But did it?
No, I had never heard of any reactions other than a sore arm, fever, this sort of thing.
Judy Roberts' husband, Gene, also took the shot.
Yes, I looked at that document. I signed it. Nothing on there said I was going to have a heart attack or I'd get Guillain-Barré, which I never heard of.
What if people from the government, from the Center for Disease Control, what if they had indeed known about it? What would be your feeling?
They should have told us.
Did anyone ever come to you and say, you know something, fellas? There's the possibility of neurological damage if you get into a mass immunization program.
No.
No one ever did?
No.
Do you know Michael Hatwick?
Yes, mm-hmm.
Dr. Michael Hatwick directed the surveillance team for the swine flu program at the CDC. His job was to find out what possible complications could arise from taking the shot and to report his findings to those in charge.
Did you know ahead of time, Dr. Hatwick, that there had been case reports
of neurological disorders, neurological illness, apparently associated with the injection of influenza vaccine?
Absolutely.
You did?
Yes.
How'd you know that?
By review of the literature.
So you told your superiors, the men in charge of the swine flu immunization program, about the possibility of neurological disorders?
Absolutely.
What would you say if I told you that your superiors say that you never told them about the possibility of neurological complications?
That's nonsense. I can't believe that they would say that they did not know that there were neurological illnesses associated with influenza vaccination. That simply is not true. We did know that.
Consensus of the scientific community was that the evidence relating neurologic disorders to influenza immunization was such that they did not feel that this association was a real one.
You didn't feel it was necessary to tell the American people that information?
I think that over the years, we have tried to inform the American people as fully as possible.
As part of informing Americans about the swine flu threat, Dr. Sensor's CDC also helped create the advertising to get the public to take the shot.
Let me read to you from one of your own agency's memos planning the campaign to urge Americans to take the shot. The swine flu vaccine has been taken by many important persons, he wrote. Example, President Ford, Henry Kissinger, Elton John, Muhammad Ali, Mary Tyler Moore, Rudolf Nureyev, Walter Cronkite, Ralph Nader, Edward Kennedy, etc., etc. True?
I'm not familiar with that particular piece of paper, but I do know that at least of that group, President Ford did take the vaccination.
Did you talk to these people beforehand to find out if they planned to take the shot?
I did not know.
Did anybody?
I do not know.
Did you get permission to use their names in your campaign?
I do not know.
Mary, did you take a swine flu shot?
No, I did not.
Did you give them permission to use your name saying that you had or were going to?
Absolutely not. Never did.
Did you ask your own doctor about taking the swine flu shot?
Yes, and at the time he thought it might be a good idea. But I resisted it because I was leery of having the symptoms that sometimes go with that kind of inoculation.
So you didn't?
No, I didn't.
Have you spoken to your doctor since?
Yes.
And?
He's delighted that I didn't take that shot.
I asked, told Judy to take the shot. She wasn't going to take it, and she never had had shots. And I'm mad with my government because they knew the facts. But they didn't release those facts because if they had released them, the people wouldn't have taken. And they can come out tomorrow and tell me there's going to be an epidemic, and they can drop off like flies next to me. I will not take another shot that my government tells me to take.
Meantime, Judy Roberts and some 4,000 others like her are still waiting for their day in court.
So what was fascinating about this 60-minute piece is that it shows us that the media used to question government policy. There was a general distrust in government if the government says that we must do something. And I believe that was because 40 years ago, the culture contained more Christian values, the doctrine of sin, that power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. It took 3 years from the rollout of the swine flu vaccine before 60 Minutes was reporting on its uselessness and its adverse effects. Yet today, there is censorship of any negative news concerning the COVID vaccine and an almost religious dogma that we must trust the science. Plus today, there is more of a widespread belief in utilitarianism, that adverse effects don't matter. What matters is the greatest good for the greatest number of people, even if some people are injured or die. That it's okay for government to use people as lab rats because people are expendable. And that's the same cultural attitudes we find in communist countries. So today in America, there's less of an emphasis on individual human rights. And I think it's because we're losing that Christian consensus. And that reduction of an emphasis on human rights affects public policy. Well, in 3 years, in 2025, will there be a 60-minute story about failed COVID vaccines? Or will the media and politicians try to save face and bury the story? Or will government vaccine programs grow even more intense as pagan people have greater fears? Here's a flashback news story from July 21st, 2021, 6 months after the COVID vaccine was launched. This is from OAN, conservative alternative media. And the report is very much like that 60-minute CBS piece from 40 years ago. So let's watch this on YouTube. Oh, YouTube doesn't allow negative information about vaccines on their website. So over to BitChute we go.
Over 9,000 people have died after receiving the COVID vaccine as the CDC is joined by European regulators investigating its potentially dangerous side effects. One America's Pearson Sharp has more.
Deaths from the coronavirus vaccines continue to mount, though politicians and the mainstream media remain oddly silent about this man-made disaster. As of Friday, July 9th, there are more than 9,000 deaths attributed directly to the vaccine. That's a massive surge of over 3,000 deaths from just 1 week before, when the total was just over 6,000. This data is taken directly from the VAERS government website, which records and tracks adverse events related to the vaccine. While these events are not confirmed, patients must sign a legal statement swearing to their accuracy before submitting their report. Additionally, there are some 27,000 people who have been hospitalized, over 3,000 people have suffered heart attacks, and 19,000 people have experienced a severe allergic reaction, all from taking the coronavirus vaccine. Meanwhile, the risk of a potentially deadly heart condition known as myocarditis continues to grow worse, with reported cases of heart inflammation over 25 times higher than normal. Drug regulators in Europe are warning that both the Pfizer and Moderna COVID vaccines could be responsible for this dangerous heart inflammation. Officials from the European Medicines Agency urge caution before getting the vaccine and suggest that only those without blood disorders or heart conditions receive the shot. The agency says it may add myocarditis and pericarditis as possible side effects of the vaccine, noting that most cases appeared in younger men within 2 weeks of being vaccinated. This comes as the CDC continues investigating numerous cases of deadly heart inflammation, including the death of a 13-year-old boy from Michigan who died on June 17th, 3 days after receiving the vaccine. Perhaps as a result of these deaths, the World Health Organization has issued a new statement that children don't need to get the vaccine for the Chinese coronavirus, especially since new studies from England back up what many doctors have said from the beginning, that children are largely immune to the Chinese virus anyway. According to researchers in the UK who studied 470,000 child patients, the most comprehensive study to date, children were found to have a better than 99.995% chance of surviving. This study demonstrates that natural immunity offers a far better chance of survival than any of the COVID vaccines, and with none of the risks for debilitating side effects or even death. Pearson Sharp, One America News.
So that report was from the summer of last year. Since that time, VAERS is reporting 26,000 deaths, and many European countries have banned the Moderna vaccine for those under age 30 because of cases of myocarditis. Now, before I address another story illustrating misguided trust in science, I need to address the argument that science has helped us so much in the past with vaccines, the polio vaccine, the measles vaccine. Why should we doubt the science now, when in the past, science has saved many lives? Well, should we trust Harvard and Princeton University now, just because in the 18th century, those schools trained many good ministers of the gospel? No, times have changed. Those institutions now operate on a different foundation for ethics. And I've heard from many people in the field of medicine that the medical profession is not what it used to be 40 years ago. There's less charity, and now it's all about the money. MMR vaccines, measles, mumps, and rubella, they're all live viruses. People's immune systems are triggered by those viruses, but they're weaker forms of the virus, so there are little adverse consequences. The messenger RNA technology behind these new vaccines is a whole new unproven science. injecting messenger RNA into people's cells in order for our own cells to produce the toxic spike protein used by the COVID-19 virus. That's why these new vaccines are being questioned by leading scientists, even Robert Malone, the inventor of the messenger RNA technology. Now, there are some companies like Novavax in Maryland that are producing a traditional vaccine for COVID, but it just takes time to develop a COVID strain that's harmless. And their efforts may be unnecessary because many scientists see the weak Omicron version of COVID as a natural vaccine. It triggers people's immune system without a serious mortality rate, and it actually does a better job of immunizing the public than the trillions being spent on big pharma. Well, back to the news. Another story that reminds us that the science is not really the science is the masking controversy. The news media started to report on the fact that cloth masks are useless. The virus goes right through cloth masks. Maybe the media started running these stories because diehard maskers wanted to enforce more extreme masking. But the federal government, seeing this pushback on cloth masks, decided to promote N95 masks. And the government purchased 400 million N95 masks to pass out for free. Here's an article from the Wall Street Journal, where to get your free N95 mask. But then there's this piece from JustFacts.com reporting on the dangers of N95 masks. And I knew this because I have a son in medical school. N95 masks were never meant to be worn by the general public all day long, especially not children. In medical facilities, OSHA requires a medical evaluation for every employee who is going to wear an N95 mask. Because N95 masks are so thick, they restrict airflow much more than surgical masks or cloth masks. So you're breathing back into your body CO2 levels that are dangerous. Now, I recently just saw a reporter wearing an N95 mask, and you could see the mask going in and out with every breath the reporter made. And the reporter was struggling to breathe. So here's that report from Just Facts.
Welcome to Just Facts News, where we bring you thoroughly vetted facts that other newscasts have ignored or distorted. During a recent broadcast of ABC's World News Tonight, anchor Kana Whitworth reported.
Tonight, the Biden administration gearing up to roll out 400 million N95 masks for Americans to pick up free of charge at pharmacies and community centers as early as the end of next week. Each person will be able to get up to three N95s, which the CDC says provides the highest level of protection.
The most important thing for anyone is to wear the highest quality mask that fits well and that you can tolerate.
And Dr. Fauci says the government will order and send out special N95 masks for kids as well.
Now here is what ABC News and Fauci failed to tell you. N95 masks are commonly worn in medical facilities, and OSHA requires employers to conduct a medical evaluation of every employee who wears one because, quote, it may place a burden on an employee's health. Why is that? Because humans create carbon dioxide as we breathe, and the air we exhale has about 100 times the level of carbon dioxide as the air we inhale. Masks restrict airflow, causing the wearers to rebreathe some of the air we exhale. And N95 masks restrict airflow much more than surgical masks and cloth masks. Thus, a study published in 2013 examined CO2 levels in 30 different kinds of N95 masks and found that in the breathing zones of these masks, the levels were 30 to 80 times higher than the levels of CO2 in fresh air. This is roughly 3 to 7 times higher than OSHA's work shift limit for carbon dioxide. It is also 13 to 35 times higher than the CO2 limit for classrooms in many countries. In other words, schools and parents that force children to wear N95 masks are forcing them to inhale levels of carbon dioxide that are 13 to 35 times higher than allowed by law. The CO2 levels in N95 masks are also about 5 to 14 times higher than the levels shown to cause large and statistically significant reductions in complex decision-making ability. Think about that in the context of a hospital, where a 2013 study showed that there are about 210,000 fatal errors per year in U.S. hospitals, and the actual figure may be above 400,000. That's roughly on par with the number of COVID-19 deaths during the first year of the pandemic in the U.S. Studies published in scientific journals also show that N95s cause headaches, cardiopulmonary stress, and possible fatal cardiac events among people with heart disease and those who are exercising vigorously. So keep these facts in mind and the track records of people who are pushing N95 masks before you put one on yourself or your child. Thanks for joining us. Tune in next time for more thoroughly vetted facts that other newscasts have ignored or distorted.
So those are the facts. Yet Fauci and the Biden administration are pushing people to wear N95 masks. They say they're all about the science, but they're not even checking out the science. So something is terribly amiss in this trust the science narrative. It's trust the politicians. It's trust the fearful. It's trust the irrational. I can't even imagine parents making their children wear masks to school all day long. I would homeschool my children. I would send them to private school before I would make my children wear a mask all day long. I know what I just said might anger some parents who believe what they've been told about wearing masks. But don't be angry at me. Be angry with those who have been getting the science wrong. My sister's a teacher, and she sent me a picture of a student's mask. I hope you have a strong stomach. And this is what a mask becomes by the end of the day. A filthy, disease-ridden rag. So my sister refuses to require students to wear masks all day long because it's unhealthy. This whole thing of masking is just irrational fear. It's hilarious. You see these basketball players and these football players sitting on the sidelines wearing masks. But masks are no longer needed when they're on top of each other playing the game. You go into a restaurant. You have to wear a mask until you get to your seat, but once you're there, you can take it off. So what marginal difference is that going to make? You know, if you want to be sure you don't get COVID, don't go to a restaurant in the first place. The mask is giving people a false sense of security. I often go for long walks, and I've seen people oftentimes on the other side of the road, 15 feet away from me, with the air blowing away from us, put on masks when they get close to me and then take those masks off when I pass them. These people know nothing about how microbiology works. They're overly fearful of what's inevitable. It's not about the science. So to recap, the first bizarre story I covered, demonstrating that COVID policy is not about science, but fear and ideology, is the media censorship of what in years past would have been headlines. Second bizarre story is the irrational masking policy. A third bizarre story is the vaccination of children. Children who, as a group, have not been affected adversely by COVID. Even the World Health Organization put out a statement saying that the vaccination of children should not be a priority. And in my last video on COVID policy back in January, I mentioned this, but I want to give you an update. Back in October, the FDA approved the vaccination of children down to 5 years old. But Pfizer wants to now push it further. In January, Pfizer asked the government to approve for emergency use the vaccination of children under 5 years old down to 2 months old. Since children are not at risk, the big pharma profit motive and the vaccine hysteria motive have to be considered. Pfizer and Moderna and Johnson & Johnson have all these vaccines that they need to sell somewhere. And this leads me to the next bizarre story number four, the Cancer Moonshot Program. This was a program started under President Obama. But last week, Biden announced he wants to revitalize it and increase funding. The original idea was to spend on cancer research the same enormous amount of money the government spent on Apollo missions. But why bring this up now? Well, because pharmaceutical companies have used this messenger RNA technology on the COVID vaccine, but some believe that they can use this technology to fight cancer. That by injecting RNA into people, they can program people's body to fight the cancer. This is not proven technology, but it sounds impressive. And the pharmaceutical companies would love to have the government lavish money upon them to work on this, rather than through normal private research and development. So my guess concerning this new moonshot initiative is follow the money. If you are a CEO of Pfizer and you earn billions in the COVID crisis, how are you going to keep your stock prices up after the COVID crisis is over? Where are you going to get more government money? So they're already pushing the government for more messenger RNA products. Are my suspicions crazy conspiracy stuff that Big Pharma is just after the money? Well, just yesterday, James O'Keefe with Project Veritas posted an undercover video of an FDA executive proving my very point.
Biden wants to inoculate as many people as possible. So you're going to have to get an annual shot. I mean, it hasn't been formally announced yet. They don't want to rile everyone up.
The drug companies, the food companies, the vaccine companies, so they pay us hundreds of millions of dollars a year to hire and keep the reviewers to approve their products. If they can get every person required at an annual vaccine, that is a recurring return of money going into their company. I mean, just from everything I've heard, they're not going to not approve it.
So what these pharmaceutical companies are after is a recurring return of money going into their companies. And so they want the children and they want everyone to be vaccinated every year. If the gold weren't the money, the vaccines would not be promoted as a necessity. Natural immunity would be sufficient. Well, you can watch the rest of that Project Veritas video on your own. Bizarre story number five, Judicial Watch lawsuits. Before Trump left office, he began an investigation into the origin of the COVID-19 virus. The then Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, said the COVID-19 pandemic was avoidable. Any responsible country would have invited World Health investigators to Wuhan within days of an outbreak. China instead refused offers of help, including from the United States, and punished brave Chinese doctors, scientists, and journalists who tried to alert the world to the dangers of the virus. Beijing continues today to withhold vital information that scientists need to protect the world from this deadly virus. And the next one. So when Biden took office, he shut down the investigation. Just like in Fauci's undercover emails, Fauci tried to suppress the lab leak story. So Judicial Watch, a great conservative watchdog organization, filed a request to look at the records of the investigation. Of course, the Biden administration refused to comply. Now Judicial Watch is suing for information. Why the cover-up? Makes you suspicious. Just like Judicial Watch is suing to look at all the FDA paperwork that led to the approval of the COVID vaccines. The FDA is refusing to release the paperwork, wanting 50 years before they release it, but a court judge ruled that the FDA must begin releasing those records in March. Bizarre story number six. Remember all of those free COVID tests that the government sent out? Well, the federal government paid a Chinese company $1.3 billion to make those kits. And this was right after Biden claimed that the federal government's overspending is being spent on buying American products. Bizarre story number seven. The Stacey Abrams pitchers. Abrams ran for governor of Georgia. She's a leader in the Democrat Party in Georgia. And she was touring a school for Black History Month. And there she was, having her picture taken without a mask. But all those poor children behind her and the school workers behind her needed to be masked up. So she claimed that she just took the mask off for those pictures. And then pictures surfaced showing that throughout the entire day, she was not wearing a mask. Well, this is a totalitarian mindset. Rules for thee, but not for me. Plus, she's a liar. She'll say anything for political gain and cover. Did you see all of those Super Bowl shots of the celebrities in the stands not wearing masks? Yet all of the common people have to wear masks. Story number eight. Joe Rogan being criticized for having on his Spotify podcast the most well-known anti-vax medical scientist, Robert Malone, the inventor of the mRNA technology. And the media went ballistic over this because Joe Rogan has the most popular podcast in the country, over 11 million subscribers. And that podcast woke up a lot of people. And the powers that be, the diehard vaxxers, couldn't stand for this. Their censorship was starting to break down. And right after Rogan's podcast, the masking mandates in the blue states started to collapse. The mandates started to lose their political support due to Rogan, due to the Canadian truckers, due to masking protests, due to parents protesting schools. From Time Magazine, one of many articles, dropping mask mandates, Democrat governors bow to political reality. Because the science is irrefutable, states and counties without school mask mandates have had the same COVID outcomes as states and counties with mask mandates. Even left-leaning magazines such as The Atlantic had an article critical of masking policy. Joe Rogan said the following on Instagram, something conservatives have been saying for months, but now it's finally resonating with the public. Quote from Rogan, "The problem I have with the term misinformation, especially today, is that many of the things that we thought of as misinformation just a short while ago are now accepted as fact. 8 months ago, if you said, if you get vaccinated, you can still catch COVID and you can still spread COVID, you would be removed from social media. Now that's an accepted fact. If you said, I don't think cloth masks work, you would be banned from social media. Now that it is openly and repeatedly stated on CNN. If you said, I think it's possible that COVID-19 came from a lab, you would have been banned on social media platforms, but now it's on the cover of Newsweek." Unquote, Joe Rogan. So the public is starting to see that was what was called misinformation. And what was banned as misinformation is now 1 year later accepted as a truth. So therefore, what else is now being called misinformation that will someday be known as a fact? The public is no longer trusting the media, the government, and the science. And here's the granddaddy of all commentary, a piece by Arthur Herman, an award-winning journalist, a piece that will go down in history, in a Wall Street Journal editorial entitled Politics and the Great Confinement, as in 1932, the electorate is in the mood to punish the party in power for its general incompetence. Quote, "We may be on the verge of the most consequential U.S. political realignment in almost a century. The cause is COVID, or to be precise, the mishandling of the pandemic response by government, media, and the scientific establishment. As the Great Depression destroyed the American electorate's faith in Wall Street and big business, sweeping in a Democrat-dominated political order, so too has the Great Confinement in the form of lockdowns, shutdowns, and mandates, wrecked faith in the basic competence of American government, as in 1932, the party out of power stands to benefit. The U.S. isn't alone. For the first time in history, the leading industrial nations decided to close their economies and order citizens to stay home for months at a time. They shuttered schools and businesses, imposing mask and vaccine mandates, and disrupting virtually every institution upon which modern life depends. Unfortunately, the Great Confinement didn't work. It neither stemmed the spread of COVID nor prevented large number of deaths. The pandemic tempted governments and their elite allies to treat citizens as passive objects to be dictated to, bullied and coerced en masse, and attitudes not unlike that found in China, Cuba, and North Korea, instead of as thinking, active subjects with whom government is in partnership. With few exceptions, the Nordic countries are the best examples, governments failed to find ways to affirm that despite the pandemic, citizens were still individuals imbued with inalienable rights and independent moral standing. This is, after all, how most people see themselves in modern society, as free autonomous beings rather than as laboratory rats in a series of social science experiments. The models of government used during the pandemic fly in the face of our own self-perception. This is a sure formula for sowing distrust, resentment, and ultimately resistance. That resistance has already spilled out into the streets in Europe, cities, and highways in Canada. What people will remember from this extraordinary episode isn't the experience of COVID itself, terrible though it's been. It will be the ineptitude and the incompetence of government institutions that are supposed to protect citizens, and the indifference, as this was happening, of the media and the scientific establishment. Unquote, Arthur Herman. As I've been saying for the last 2 years, COVID will end with a long overdue mistrust in science and government. So by way of conclusion, here's an interesting story from the Smithsonian Magazine. An Alabama town has a monument honoring the most destructive pest in American history. And there on top of this beautiful pedestal, in the middle of town, is a statue of the ugly boll weevil. The boll weevil decimated the cotton industry, but in the city of Enterprise, Alabama, they found prosperity instead. The plaque on the monument reads, "In profound appreciation to the boll weevil and what it has done as a herald of prosperity, this monument was erected by the citizens of Enterprise, Coffee County, Alabama." The boll weevil came from Mexico to America in 1892. It lives exclusively on cotton plants, lays its eggs on the butt of the plant, and the grubs eat the entire cotton ball. And the weevil spread across the South and destroyed 90% of America's cotton output. So why honor such a pest? Well, the farmers in Enterprise were forced to switch to another crop. They switched to peanuts, and soon they were making more money from peanuts and peanut oil than they ever made with cotton. They also were forced to diversify into potatoes, sugar, and sorghum. So the moral of the story? Romans chapter 8, verse 28. "And we know that God causes all things to work together for good, to those who love God, to those who are called according to his purpose. Not for everyone, but for those who are God's people. Because everything that's happening in this world right now is for the salvation and the sanctification of those who are chosen by God." Now, often in our spiritual ignorance and in our lack of faith, we miss the blessing that God has for us in disaster. Case in point, remember Abraham? God calls him to go into a land that God has for him, the land of Canaan. But when Abraham arrives there, there's a famine in the land. So Abraham leaves the place of God's promise and goes to Egypt and gets into some trouble there. For he probably thought, surely God does not want me to live through a famine. But consider this. If Abraham is moving into an occupied land, when's the best time to move in there? Well, when everyone's moving out. Even in buying real estate, the time to buy is when nobody thinks the land is worth anything. God had Abraham enter the land at the perfect time, in a time of hunger and famine. But Abraham didn't have the faith and the wisdom to believe God. Now, regarding this COVID-19 disaster, caused by human deviance, made worse by bad government policy, in some way, COVID-19 is resulting in the salvation and the sanctification of God's people. Now, we don't know what that is right now. At least I cannot say definitively what it is. It may have something to do with hindering the wickedness in America that would have broken out if COVID-19 never came along. It may have something to do with showing God's people the machinations of government, reducing our trust in the experts. We don't know for sure the benefits, but we can trust God's wisdom and his word, that he's causing all things to work together for good to those who love God, to those who are called according to his purpose. So maybe we need a monument to the COVID-19 virus. Like there's a monument to the boll weevil. And just like the plaque to the boll weevil reads, the COVID plaque would read in profound appreciation to the COVID virus for what it has done as a herald of spiritual prosperity. In the late spring of 2020, I was riding my bicycle on the Jersey boardwalk, and I looked down, and there it was, the COVID-19 virus. So I picked it up, and I put it in my pocket. I brought it home, and I told my sons and my grandchildren that Grandpa has captured the COVID-19 virus that everyone was worried about. I also have this candlestick. And on it, I'm going to put a plaque, or at least a piece of paper with some tape on the back, which says, in profound appreciation to COVID SARS-2 virus and what it has done as a herald of spiritual prosperity. And I'll put the COVID virus on top, and I'll put this beside Mike Lindell and Charles Haddon Spurgeon, just as a reminder of Romans chapter 8, verse 28, God causes all things to work together for good. So thanks for listening today. Don't forget to subscribe, to like, to share, to leave a comment below, especially if you're listening on Rumble. A lot of people listen to me on Rumble, but very few subscribe because so few people want to bother, you know, signing up for a Rumble account. But let me encourage you to do that because it's a way to support conservative media. God bless. Keep standing firm in the faith, and may Jesus Christ reign.